Welcome to the Matt Lombardo Show, part of the Stacking the Box podcast. Please welcome your host, Matt Lombardo.
All right, hello, and welcome on in to the Matt Lombardo Show, part of Fansided Stacking the Box podcast feed. I'm Matt Lombardo, as always, and boy, oh boy, do we have a jam-packed show for you this week. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll chat with Carolina Panthers defensive end Yetur Gross-Matos and Baltimore Ravens defensive back Devontae Harris. But we're recording this on the Friday in the midst of the 2021 NFL Draft, and certainly a lot to get into there. Before we get into our biggest winners and losers, before we get into the best picks and all of the speculation and rumors surrounding Aaron Rodgers' future in Green Bay, a little bit of housekeeping as always. If you like what you hear on the podcast, please go ahead and subscribe in the Apple Podcast Store, in Spotify, search for Stacking the Box and NFL Podcast. You get this podcast every Friday, and you get Stacking the Box every Tuesday, Fansided's outstanding portfolio of NFL podcasts. And let's just jump right into it, because as the first round has come to an end in the NFL draft, I think that the biggest winners overall so far are the teams that were the most aggressive, the teams that moved, the teams that made the trades on Thursday night, not just to go and get the players that they were targeting in this year's class, but also to bolster their draft capital this year, and more importantly, in next year's draft, in 2022. When you talk to GMs and executives and scouts around the league, there was so much uncertainty around this year's draft class. Nobody knew exactly what the top prospects were, especially those who opted out. There were some concerns there. It's a smaller class overall, but the teams that went ahead and traded for draft picks next year, I think really helped themselves tremendously. And I think the biggest winner in this year's draft so far are the Philadelphia Eagles and Howie Roseman, because we talk about this all the time when it comes to Roseman. He's a riverboat gambler when it comes to the draft, and he's very adept, and he very frequently moves up and down the board, and that's no different. The Eagles, of course, made a couple of moves before the draft when they traded Carson Wentz to the Colts, and then the moves that they made with the Miami Dolphins to acquire two first-round picks in addition to their own first-round pick next year. So they have three first-round picks in 2022. But on Thursday night, as the board was unfolding and you saw Kyle Pitts, as expected and as I reported was going to be the case 2 weeks ago, go off the board number four overall to the Atlanta Falcons, you saw the quarterback start to fall. You saw Patrick Surtain and J.C. Horn go off the board. Howie Roseman was sitting there at the number 12 pick. Dallas Cowboys were on the clock at number 10. And Roseman very clearly and very obviously knew that the player atop Dave Gettleman's board, as I wrote about earlier this week on G-Men HQ and on my weekly column on fansided.com, was the number one player on the Giants board, and Howie Roseman went up and sniped Devonta Smith out of Alabama, who many believe to be one of the two best receivers in this year's class and one of the five or six best prospects overall, and he did it without giving up that first-round pick. They now have three first-round picks in 2022. They've dropped Devonta Smith into that offense, reunited him with quarterback Jalen Hurts, and this is the type of trade that, in my opinion, not only saved Howie Roseman's job going into and beyond next year, but it's the type of trade that I think extends his window and extends his time in Philadelphia. Because when you talk to people around the league, I had a scout tell me that when they watch Devonta Smith, they see Marvin Harrison. And they see a guy that can dictate to opposing defenses. And when you think back to when the Indianapolis Colts were really up and running with Peyton Manning at quarterback, they had all those weapons with Brandon Stokley and Edgerrin James and Marvin Harrison. Nobody could play cover two against them because Harrison's ability to take the top off a defense, and you needed to lock him down one-on-one. That's the type of player that some scouts see Devonta Smith developing into. So you look at the Eagles, and I thought they did a really nice job of going up and getting a player they targeted at a position of need. They took him away from a division rival who would have taken him, and they traded only a third-round pick to do it, and they preserved their three first-round picks for next year. So Howie Roseman and the Eagles, to me, are the biggest winners. But the Giants aren't that far off. And I think what the Giants did and what Dave Gettleman, the trade that he made, the first time in his career that he's ever traded down in the NFL draft, that's a monumental sea change, and it's commendable. And I think that when you look at how they viewed this board, and oh, by the way, let's just remember here that Dave Gettleman said on Thursday night before they got on the phone last week with the Chicago Bears and general manager Ryan Pace, Howie Roseman called the Giants and asked him point blank, Dave, would you trade with me? Would you be open to trading within the division? And Gettleman said, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't I be? But the Giants wound up ultimately moving back in a deal with the Bears. The Eagles moved up ahead of the Giants in a trade with the Cowboys. So I think that some of that sticker shock about trades within the division might start to fade as teams now prioritize their own needs versus worrying about what the teams within the division and what their rivals are doing. But I look at what the Giants did, and it's very clear and very obvious that the Giants specifically have higher grades and a higher opinion of the 2022 class than they do on this year's draft class. And they move back to 20 with the Bears. They get a first-round pick, which based on Chicago and the roster that they have and the uncertainty of what they're going to do with Justin Fields and if they're going to waste time with Andy Dalton early in the season, you could see the Bears wind up picking in the top 15 or so, maybe even top 10. And if you're the Giants, you needed to do everything in your power to surround Daniel Jones with as many weapons as possible, and they went and got another one in the draft, Kadarius Toney out of Florida. Now, I don't know that I liked him as much as Elijah Moore, who's still available going into Friday. I didn't like him as much as I liked the kid out of Minnesota, Rashad Bateman. I thought that he has the chance to be a field stretcher and a red zone target and a big-bodied receiver that would have fit in nicely. But the Giants want speed. It's very obvious. They signed John Ross in free agency. They brought in Kenny Golladay, who's a legitimate number one and maybe a top 12 to 15 receiver in this league, if not better than that. And now you drop Toney in the slot. Some people compare him to Tyreek Hill. Some people see, you know, shades of some of those other speedy slot receivers. They now have an arsenal with Saquon Barkley and Evan Ingram and Kenny Golladay and Kadarius Toney, and however it shakes out with the rest of the receivers, Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton, John Ross, where they can make a real evaluation on Daniel Jones. And if Jones is the guy and the Giants win 8, 9, 10 games, you have an additional first-round pick. But if he's not, it's the same case for the Eagles. Just like if Jalen Hurts falters and the Eagles can go and get the top quarterback, the Giants are now equally well-positioned to go and get the top quarterback in next year's class. So I love what the Giants did. They also added a couple of mid-round picks to be able to use as trade chips if they want to go up and get a guy in round two or round three or even for next year. So those two teams, to me, are big winners. And I absolutely love, we talked about Rashad Bateman, I love what Baltimore did. Because you look at wide receiver, and that was one of their biggest needs, even though they have Hollywood Brown. They needed a dynamic number two wide receiver or number one wide receiver even to pair with Lamar Jackson to help elevate that offense. And they got Bateman. I mean, he's a big play, big frame, 6 foot, 210 pound red zone target. And you drop him into that offense, it's just another weapon. And I think that that's going to serve them very well in an AFC where you got to score points. And even more importantly than scoring points in the AFC, it's rushing the passer, especially against Patrick Mahomes. We've talked about that the last few weeks on this podcast, that you need pass rushers if you're going to get past Kansas City. And at the back end of the first round, Baltimore lands Penn State's Jason Owe. And Jason Owe is a guy who didn't have a sack last year, but he has freakish athleticism. He's a guy that ran a 4.39 in the 40-yard dash, had a 12-foot vertical leap. He's a guy that when you talk to evaluators around the league, they were pounding the table to get him into their building, to get him into their system, to untap and unleash that athleticism in their scheme. And the Ravens went and they had him fall into his lap. So they added a pass rusher. They added a receiver. They addressed two of their most glaring needs on both sides of the football. And to me, they laid the foundation for a really strong draft class. But then you look at their division rivals and the Steelers, another team to me where I say, wow, what a great pick. And I know that a lot of teams don't value the running back position, but Najee Harris is a versatile weapon. Coming out of Alabama, he averaged 5.8 yards per carry. He's a dynamic pass catcher out of the backfield. And you look at that offense, you're trotting out a 39-year-old quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger who it looked like his arm fell off late last November, who couldn't push the ball downfield. Defenses see that. And even though you have playmakers at wide receiver like Deontay Johnson, and you look at Juju Smith-Schuster, you look at Chase Claypool, three really solid, electrifying playmakers in the vertical passing game, defenses could kind of, you know, give you a cushion and say, hey, you know, you're not going to beat us over the top. Well, now you bring in Najee Harris. all of a sudden, you got to creep up towards the line of scrimmage. You got to respect the running game, not just as a ball carrier, but this running back as a receiver. And that should open up some space and some opportunities for those wide receivers. So the Steelers are probably not going to be able to compete for a Super Bowl with Ben Roethlisberger playing at the level that he did over the final 6 or 7 weeks last year. But their offense got better, and Najee Harris takes a lot of pressure off of him. Now, the pick that's been kind of polarizing, that a lot of people, some people believe was a little bit of a reach, some people believe they overpaid. I'm not in that camp. I look at the Chicago Bears, and I love what they did. I love going to get Justin Fields. I love the aggressiveness, and I'm of the school of thought, especially when it comes to the quarterback position. If you don't have a quarterback, and your guy is available, and he's sliding a bit, go get him. I don't really care what the price is at quarterback. If your convictions are, this guy has the potential to be a top 15 quarterback, go get him. And you look at Justin Fields' skill set, he's an ideal fit, and he's tailor-made for Matt Nagy's system. Because you look at him, and coming out of Ohio State, you watch the tape, you look at what he did in the national championship game against Clemson, in the playoff game against Clemson, and then again and against Alabama. You know, Fields arrives as a far more polished prospect, in my opinion, than Carson Wentz was coming out of North Dakota State. And you think back to quarterback coach John DeFilippo in Philadelphia, now in the same role with the Bears. DeFilippo rebuilt Carson Wentz's throwing motion and molded him into an MVP candidate in his second season. DeFilippo doesn't need to do any of those things, doesn't need to go any of those lengths with Fields. He just needs to harness the athleticism. You look at Fields, I love the arm strength. I've watched him a lot. He terrorized Penn State for the past couple of years in the Big Ten. I know what the kid can do. I've seen him make plays on the run. I've seen him elude pressure. I've seen the accuracy on the quick throws. And this is a guy that can make every throw on the route tree. He's mobile, he makes throws on the run, and he's elusive enough to run for first downs when the pocket collapses around him. And finally, it seems like the Chicago Bears have made their way out of quarterback purgatory. So to me, those are the teams that really help themselves the most. I think the Bills are a team that, after what happened in the AFC Championship game when they barely breathed on Patrick Mahomes, they needed to get a pass rusher. They got one in Gregory Rousseau. Now, I don't know that that was the best pick. I don't know that he was the best pass rusher. You talk to teams around the league and you talk to, you know, league sources, and they'll tell you that there's a lot of uncertainty about Gregory Rousseau, especially after the opt-out. His teammate Jalen Phillips was long gone, but teams had significantly higher grades on Phillips, significantly higher grades on Owe than they did on Gregory Rousseau. But the Bills did what they had to do. They got a pass rusher. Now, whether or not he's the right pass rusher, time will tell. So much more to get into on this show. On the other side, we'll chat with Carolina Panthers defensive end Yetur Gross-Matos. A little bit later, Devontae Harris, the defensive back for the Baltimore Ravens, joins the program as well. And we'll get into all of the rumors, all of the speculation, everything happening around Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Keep it locked right here on the Matt Lombardo Show, inside Fanside, at Stacking the Box podcast feed. The Matt Lombardo Show podcast is brought to you by Danette May and Mindful Health LLC, featuring Danette May's top superfood product from her Earth Echo Foods line, Cacao Bliss. Nothing feels better than being able to enjoy rich, smooth, creamy chocolate and knowing you're doing something good for your body at the same time. We start with 100% organic cacao beans that are naturally kissed by the sun, maintaining its miraculous health benefits. Then we blend it with turmeric, MCT oil, coconut, Himalayan sea salt, cinnamon, and black pepper for the perfect blend to make you feel the best you ever have. The result? Fall in love with truly decadent, healthy, guilt-free chocolate, removing your cravings, facilitating weight loss, boosting your energy, and reducing your inflammation with one simple drink. Not only that, it is friendly to paleo, gluten-free, keto, vegan, and vegetarian diets. For the last 8 years, we've been a leader in the superfoods market and are proud to have served millions of customers worldwide. We're offering up to 15% off when you use the promo code MINUTE15. Just go to earthechofoods.com/minutemedia and follow us on social media at the Danette May and at Earth Echo Foods. Welcome back into the Matt Lombardo Show, in a conversation that I'm really looking forward to. Carolina Panthers edge rusher Yetur Gross-Matos joins the program. You can follow Yetur on Twitter and Instagram at @__Lobo99. Yetur, how's it going, my man?
Oh, I'm doing well.
Awesome. I'm happy to have you here. And, you know, thinking back, we're in the middle of the NFL draft right now. You know, we're recording this on a Friday after round one. You, of course, were chosen in round two. Take me back to what it was like draft weekend for you. There was a lot of buzz about you possibly going in round one. What was that like on Thursday night? And then what was the excitement like going into that Friday?
Yeah, I remember, you know, sitting there with my family and just being anxious, you know, as to, you know, whether I was going to go day one or day two. And I remember, you know, just my agent and my dad telling me, like, you know, regardless, you know, it's going to matter, you know, what you do once you get there. And, you know, it kind of, you know, it wasn't a good feeling after day one, you know, not being picked up and thinking that I was. But, you know, my agent told me, you know, day two, you're probably going to be gone pretty fast, which I was. So, you know, I pray for those guys and, you know, I hope everyone the best success. But it's a life-changing opportunity, obviously. And I know they're going to make the most of it.
What was the range of emotions like for you? And, you know, we saw last night Mac Jones. Some people thought it would go as high as 3. He had to sit around and wait till 15. Obviously, a little bit of a different experience than you. But was it frustrating having to wait through that first night and then falling into the second round?
It was frustrating. It definitely was. More so after, you know, after that 30-second pick was in and it wasn't, you know, he still hadn't called your name.
Yeah, that had to be a long night.
Yeah. It was. Yeah, that was probably the most frustrating part, just that you waited so long and, you know, all that stuff builds up. But, yeah, just the feeling that the gratification when they actually did say my name, you know, it made it all worth it.
Absolutely. Now, one of your former teammates in college, Micah Parsons, he was just drafted Thursday night number 11 overall by the Dallas Cowboys. What kind of player are they getting for the next decade in the heart of their defense?
I mean, Micah Parsons is incredible. Incredible athlete. I mean, to this day, still the most impressive athlete I've ever seen. You know, I tell people all the time, I'm like, I'm going to tell my kids, like, I played with Micah Parsons, most competitive dude I've been around. And he brings that energy every day and it affects the guys around him. So, I mean, I think they're getting obviously a super talented player, but, you know, off the field, a good person too. With exactly the traits that you want.
And, you know, there's also been so much talk about Jason Oway, and he really surged up draft boards this spring. I know he kind of stepped into your role at Penn State this past season. He didn't have any sacks, but he has so much athletic upside. And, you know, I talked to scouts who were kind of pounding the table for him. Despite the lack of production, the Ravens get him at 31 or 30, rather, at the very end of the first round. What kind of player is Jason Oway, and how's he going to fit into that scheme there?
I'm extremely, extremely proud of him. You know, Jason is like a little brother to me. But I mean, obviously, I think Jason is not going to have a problem fitting in pretty much anywhere. Clearly, you see he has the speed. You know, if they wanted to use him as an outside linebacker type and, you know, playing with his hands in the dirt is the system he comes from, which he excelled in. I know he had one of the greatest, not the greatest, but one of the best in the country in terms of, you know, pressuring the quarterback last year. So, I mean, he didn't have any sacks, but, you know, he was affecting the ball. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I've heard some people actually compare him to Jadeveon Clowney. Did you see any of those similarities in their two games?
I mean, in terms of being just a freak athlete, I mean, it's there. 260 running a 4.3. So. Being a threat off the edge is something, you know, comes natural to Jason, and he has the work ethic to be a great player.
And, you know, there's been some reporting this week the college football playoff is considering expanding not just from 4 to 8, but all the way to 12. You know, back in 2018, you guys rose all the way up, 2019 rather, to number 4. You know, you came one game shy from making the playoff that year, it felt like. Would you want to see the playoff expand to 12 games? Is that something that you're kind of hoping winds up happening?
I don't know. I liked it the way it was. I thought, you know, it kind of held people to a higher standard of, you know, either going to go undefeated or you shouldn't lose more than one game or just you have no shot of going, which was what it was like for me twice, losing two games a year. But no, I like it the way it was. So
And, you know, you go from Penn State, you know, high level program with James Franklin running an NFL caliber program up there in Happy Valley, to getting drafted by Matt Rhule. And you hear all the talk about toughness that defined his teams at Temple, at Baylor, before he even got to Carolina. What's he like as a head coach, and what's the secret sauce in that Matt Rhule toughness?
I mean, I think the secret sauce is the fact that it's genuine. He's a guy who talks about the brand all the time. And I mean, as far as I can tell, he's someone who lives it. The most competitive dude I've been around, toughest dude, like, and he really expects and, you know, wants it out of you every single day. And, you know, to be consistent, be the same person. And he holds everybody to that standard, no matter who they are. So, I mean, he's an embodiment of the things that he preaches.
And I know that you grew up in Virginia, and it seemed like when he was at Temple and a little bit at Baylor that Matt Rhule recruited that area pretty hard. Did you guys have a relationship before the Panthers wound up drafting? Like, did you know Matt Rhule at all before he became your head coach?
I did not. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, this has been for the Panthers really quite an offseason, and a lot of moves were made, but the biggest move of all was the Sam Darnold trade. What was your reaction when you saw that news come across?
You know, obviously excited to have the guy in the locker room, but more focused on what we're doing on defense this year.
Yeah, and tell me about that defense, because you guys seem to get better as the year went along, and I know that you did as a rookie. What's the next step for that defense? How do you level up from where you guys finished last year?
I think, you know, we kind of moved into the offseason with a pretty clear plan as far as things we need to get better at. Obviously drafting the corner at number 8, give us some more time, you know. So a couple more seconds to make some plays. That's how I see it.
Yeah, and you had a really solid rookie season, 2.5 sacks. You forced a fumble, really came on as the year went along. Year two in the system, how does Vitor Grosmatos take that next step? How do you level your game up personally from where you finished to where you're walking on the field in September?
The first step is you know, take care of my body. I had an issue with, you know, staying on the field last season. So I got to do a better job at that, which I think I have taken the steps in the right direction. And then obviously, you know, improving as a football player, that stuff never stops. So, you know, just learning from older guys, shooting younger guys, it doesn't matter. Soaking up all the knowledge I can and, you know, applying that to my game.
Another rookie on your guys' defense who really busted out was Jeremy Chinn. And, I mean, if you watch the film and you look at the stats, he really nearly stole the Defensive Rookie of the Year award. What makes these hybrid defenders, guys that can play defensive back and linebacker, or guys that can go from safety to corner, you know, what makes them so special? How do they have the ability to play those different positions at such a high level?
I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete, but I think, you know, his aggressiveness and the fact that, you know, he doesn't shy away from contact. He doesn't shy away from, you know, number one receivers. I mean, he just goes after it. So you got somebody with that mentality and that kind of athleticism, he's going to be versatile. You can use him in any way. So I know they call him Mr. Do-It-All here. So, I mean, he's doing special things.
You put him on one side, you bring in J.C. Horn. Man, that's kind of the foundation of a really dominant secondary that, like you touched on earlier, gives you guys the ability as pass rushers, you know, that extra second to get home. That's a nice start to a defense in a division where you got Tom Brady, you got Matt Ryan, but then it's kind of you guys.
Yep. I don't put us down before any other team, so, you know, I think we could compete with anybody. And you know, there are a lot of close games last year that could have went either way. And, you know, we needed to find a way to win. And, you know, I think we got, you know, the players and the coaches and the talent to do it this season.
You know, you play alongside a guy like Brian Burns. He's coming off a 9-sack season, seems to be a rising star in this league. What have you been able to learn from him, and what's it like playing across from that guy?
He's taught me a lot about rushing. A lot about what it, you know, it takes to be effective in this league. He's someone who never, you know, from day one, never, you know, showed me nothing but love and, you know, trying to take me under his wing. He's obviously a phenomenal athlete and, you know, the best pass rusher I've been around. So every day I just go into work and I try to take as much as I can from the dude.
you know, do you guys, when you're, you know, sitting in the locker room or maybe over Zoom during meetings and everybody else is off the line, do you guys talk about being that next great pass rush duo and maybe what that could mean in that division for you guys?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. We definitely talked about, you know, goals as far as what we want to do in the future and, you know, dominating offenses, you know, as a unit. So that's something that we do talk about on and off.
Yeah. And for you personally, you know, you're a rookie, you're a second round pick, and you come into a situation where the COVID-19 pandemic is full force. There's no OTAs, no mini camps. How much different is it going to be for you going into training camp this year, knowing everything that you learned last year on the fly in games in the regular season, getting able to pick up with that from what's going to be at least a little bit closer to a normal offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be huge. I mean, there's so much stuff last year, so many question marks and uncertainty, you know, just day to day. So having a better, clearer plan this year, and obviously less things are uncertain when I've been through it. So just being able to form a better plan for myself and prepare at the next level.
Yeah, watching your skill set coming into the league, I was really excited about, you know, your high motor, your ability to get after the quarterback. So hopefully this year you're able to just hit the ground running and do what you need to do. But Yator, this has been a lot of fun. It's been a great conversation. Before I brought you on, just perusing through your Instagram, your Twitter, @__lobo19. You got a cool giveaway going on. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I got a cool giveaway going on for people who comment, follow underneath the post. You know, posting their game day superstitions, most creative one, obviously getting a free autographed jersey by me and some merchandise. So let's keep it coming.
All right. Well, before they keep it coming, let's hear yours. What's your craziest game day superstition? What does Yator do on game day?
I mean, I probably say I listen to the same exact playlist every game day. And I feel like I tried a couple times, like not listening to it, and I just felt off the entire day. So I got to listen to the exact playlist.
All right. So what's the first song in the playlist? You put the AirPods in, you're running out the tunnel for warmups. What's the song that kicks off the playlist?
I got Dreams and Nightmares by Meek Mill.
There you go.
G Herbo in the middle. And then I always finish off. I got T.I. Go Get It by T.I. is the last song.
Nice, nice. Well, hopefully Yator Gross-Matos goes and gets the quarterback this year. Looking forward to seeing what you and the Panthers defense do, making strides in 2021. This has been a lot of fun. Yator, appreciate it. Everybody go ahead and follow him on Twitter and Instagram @__lobo99. Yator Gross-Matos, appreciate the time. Look forward to talking to you the further up the road, my man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Great insight there from Yator Gross-Matos. And, you know, he's a kid that I'm really excited to watch take the next step in his career on a defense that I'm really excited to see develop because, you know, we touched on it there with Yator. He talked about Jeremy Chinn and the fact that he's so versatile, doesn't back down from lining up against number one wide receivers. And they go out in the draft and they get a top 10 pick at cornerback in J.C. Horn, who had some of the best ball skills in this class. Many people had J.C. Horn above Patrick Surtain as the number one cornerback and expected him to go off the board first among defensive players, which he was. And you drop into the back end of that secondary, you have Yator Gross-Matos and Brian Burns up front, a couple really nice pass rush pieces. And I know the Panthers have a little bit of an uphill climb with the Buccaneers and Tom Brady and the defending Super Bowl champions who are going to be better because they hit the ground running and they brought back all 22 starters, which is kind of unheard of. But you look at that division, and they're building something there. And if Sam Darnold being in a better situation with more playmakers and Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator and Matt Rhule as the head coach, in a couple years down the line, we might be talking about the Carolina Panthers as a team on the cusp, a team that could make a lengthy playoff run or more than that. And I really think that Yator Gross-Matos as a second-round pick last year is great value. He's a sleeper to take a big step forward this year, and I'm excited to see what happens in Carolina. But coming up on the other side, we'll chat with another budding defensive player in the National Football League, Baltimore Ravens defensive back Devontae Harris. Keep it locked right here on the Matt Lombardo Show inside Fansided Stacking the Box podcast feed. Welcome back into the Matt Lombardo Show, and joining us as promised, Baltimore Ravens defensive back Devontae Harris. You can follow him on Twitter @WhichKid. Devontae, thanks for taking the time today, my man.
Man, thanks for having me.
Of course, happy to have you here. Now, you know, we're right in the middle of the NFL draft, and of course, you went off the board in the fifth round. What was that Saturday like for you? Because you hear all these crazy stories about guys who were playing golf, or, you know, they had to get out of the house and they got the phone call in the strangest places. What was your experience like, and where did that call come in for you?
Man, it's all crazy. So, like, I was back at home in Wichita, and I had, like, I didn't really know exactly where I was going to go. So I just handpicked like my family and friends that I wanted to come over just in case, like, you know what I'm saying? Cause draft day goes really good for some people and it goes really, you know what I'm saying? Not how you want it for other people. So I thought I was going to go in between like the third and the fifth, and I ended up going in the fifth, and it was a crazy experience. So the third round goes and I'm just like at the TV looking at the ticker and I'm like, all right, not going to the third. Then the fourth round goes, I'm looking at the ticker, I'm like, man, I'm going downstairs. So I went downstairs and isolated myself. And as soon as I got downstairs, I got a call from Cincinnati in the fifth.
Isn't that how it always happens? You know, when you're not looking for something, that's when it happens. You got the whole crew around, the whole family, you know, you're waiting and waiting. You go off by yourself and that's when you go off the board.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy. Well, you know, Devontae, the Ravens added you last year, you know, one day after you were let go by the Broncos. What was it like going from a situation in Denver where you're practicing against a pocket passer like Drew Lock to you're thrown into the mix against Lamar Jackson, one of the more mobile quarterbacks in the league? What was that like?
Yeah. So that was my first time actually seeing him live in person. And I was like, man, this dude could run. Like, you know what I'm saying? He can move and he could throw a good ball. So I saw him as a complete quarterback. So I'm like, man, this is my opportunity to go out here, you know what I'm saying, and really compete in practice. And if I can make plays against Lamar, then they're definitely going to put me, you know what I'm saying, then I definitely get put in the mix. But I think I was put into a defense that matched me really well. I'm a hard-nosed press corner, and that's the kind of ball that they play, and they just let you play free. They let you play your game, and that's what I enjoy about it.
And you look at that offense, it's run-based, a lot of, you know, zone read type of schemes, and obviously Lamar making throws on the run and yeah. You know, breaking loose in the pocket.
Yeah.
Going up against an offense with that sort of physical mindset, with your mindset as a player, how much does that help you every day?
I mean, it helps me a lot because especially playing under the Ravens organization, every day you're going to compete. Every day you're giving 110% or it's not enough. So coming in every day with that mindset, competing against guys like, you know what I'm saying, Lamar, who I think is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, you know what I'm saying? He was MVP. So, yeah, it's a perfect environment for a player to come in and really show who they are and kind of get a chance to go compete.
Everybody sees the difference that Lamar Jackson makes on the field, but you've been in that locker room now for the tail end of last season, and you obviously were there in the postseason. What does he bring to your locker room culture? What's he mean to that franchise?
Everybody loves him. Everybody, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter who is in the building, whether it's the custodian, whether it's the secretary, it doesn't matter. He treats everybody the same. Everybody, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like this family environment. And when I first got into the building, I kind of didn't know what to expect, but he treated me like family. Marlon Humphrey, all those guys are just, you know what I'm saying, just your normal everyday guys who just happen to be ballers.
Now, there's this perception around the Ravens that wide receiver is still the biggest need, but you look at that roster, you got Hollywood Brown on the other side, you got Miles Boykin, he has a lot of upside in his own right. What's it like practicing against those two every day, and what makes Hollywood Brown such a strong player?
I don't want to give too many details in regards to their individual strengths, but I just think both of those guys especially are, you know what I'm saying, really good players. But then you also got Duvernay, you know what I'm saying, who you can throw into the mix. But we got some guys that, you know what I'm saying, that can really play ball. And it's one of those things when you line up on Sunday, Monday night, or Thursday night, whatever, you know what I'm saying, day you get, you got to go compete against those guys. And coming from the Ravens organization, them already been ballers and then been put in a system where they have to just go play ball and coach lets you play. You just got to wait till Sunday to watch them work. And they're going to come every Sunday, every Monday, every Thursday, ready to get it done.
And you talked about, you know, the high-class organization that the Ravens are, and they always do a great job in their personnel department. And I really like what you guys did in the draft. You get Rashad Bateman, a big-bodied, physical playmaking wide receiver, and then you round back and you help out the defense with Jason Owe, who all kinds of upside, athleticism, you know, potentially to be a dominant pass rusher. What do you think that those guys can bring into your situation?
Well, so you kind of pulled up the wide receiver thing. We, you know what I'm saying, we added to that in the first round. So if people consider it to be a need, it was addressed. Defense,
no doubt.
And exactly, you know what I'm saying? And We have all the other guys to compliment him. We have some really great tight ends, you know what I'm saying? Some, in my opinion, the best running backs in the league. But we just got some guys. We got a bunch of guys, and just adding to the defense, you know what I'm saying? Anybody, when you turn on from the Ray Lewis, you know what I'm saying, days to and on, and you watch that Ravens defense, you know what you're going to get. So anytime they ask that, especially from a guy coming in the first round, you know that you just made that team better.
From your experience and even just watching the game from that player's standpoint of breaking down film and all that, who's the best receiver in the game today?
That's tough. You know what I'm saying? That'd be tough to say that. But I can give you close to my top three. I would say
always love a good top three list.
Yeah. I would say D. Adams, most definitely. Definitely in that mix. I would, you know what I'm saying? I would probably put him at number one. Tariq Hill, huge, you know what I'm saying, difference maker, big time player.
Speed.
And speed, yeah. He's dangerous.
He's named the cheetah for a reason, right?
Yeah. Dangerous, most definitely. And then on top of that, man, that's hard. Because if you really look at the league and you break down each individual team, ballers across the board, you know what I'm saying? So it's really hard to say, hey, this person is the best at this, you know what I'm saying? Because everybody is good at something different, and everybody brings something different to the table. But if I also say, hey, this is the best wide receiver in the game right now, he has this tool, and this tool, I would say probably D. Adams.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, you brought up ballers, and you got some real ballers in your secondary, Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey, you're in that mix as well. But those two, they're two of the more accomplished cornerbacks in the entire NFL. What have you been able to learn from them playing with those guys, practicing with those guys, and being in meetings with them every day?
I ask a lot of questions. Even me going to year four, just seeing them be, you know what I'm saying, pro bowlers, all pro, you know what I'm saying, and watching them work, how they make plays. I sit back and watch and I ask questions, and I just kind of try and build off of that, because I can always learn from other people's game.
And, you know, your defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale, he's garnered a lot of head coaching interest the last couple cycles, interviewed for a bunch of jobs last year. And of course the Giants were one of those jobs, you know, that he was in the mix for, really. You know, yeah. In your time there, what's his best attribute as a defensive coordinator?
I would say is making sure that all the players are actually a part of it. I think Harbaugh, you know what I'm saying, it starts from up top. I think Harbaugh does a really good job at involving the players and making decisions or whatever's going on. And that goes on to Wink. Like he asks a bunch of questions on what we see, what we want to see, what we think fits best. And then they kind of base our defense and stuff off of kind of our strengths to make us better. But I think he does a really good job at including the players and making sure that we're a part of everything that's going on, and that we like the defense that we're running, or the scheme, or certain personnel that we throw in. So that
that's what really stands out to me. All the successful coaches around the league, they don't necessarily meld their scheme to their players. They built the scheme around the strengths of the players. I think there's a big difference there. And you brought up John Harbaugh, and he's a guy who's, you know, won a Super Bowl. You know, you guys are perennially in the mix. You make playoff runs. What makes him so successful? And you know, he's coached special teams early in his career, so that obviously played an impact in his development as a coach. But in your experience with John, what makes him so special?
I would just say that he really gets it. You know what I'm saying? As far as understanding the players, understanding our needs, and understanding that, you know what I'm saying, the coaches are the structure, but the players make it go. You know what I'm saying? So I think he just understands it from that standpoint. And out of all the coaches that I've had, he's been the easiest to talk to, the easiest to have a conversation with, because he's kind of like, some coaches are kind of like robotic, you know what I'm saying? They kind of just do things a certain way. But I feel like he does a really good job of filtering through what he feels like we need to do and what he feels like we should do. You know what I'm saying? And kind of doing a good combination of making it work for not only himself, but the staff and the players as well.
Absolutely. You know, for you personally, for Devontae Harris, how do you get better? How do you take that next step? And what's your offseason like? What's your training regimen this time of year?
Yep. I mean, I just go in, I just try to figure out what I need to be better at, whether it's watching film, whether it's movement, whether it's, you know what I'm saying, playing with better eyes, whether it's understanding the defense better and this off season, it's been more so of really jumping into the defense, understanding it from a detailed standpoint, so I can understand what everyone's job is and how that complements my job.
Does a 17 game schedule play into that at all? Because, you know, this is the first time that you guys have been asked to play 17 games. And obviously that's going to be a little bit different. You're adding a whole extra, 60, 65 snaps onto your body. Does that change your preparation at all?
I mean, it does, but it doesn't, because at the end of the day, especially when it comes to ball, you know what I'm saying? When you line it up, you got to go make plays, whether your body's feeling great, whether it's not feeling great, you know what I'm saying? So I think the biggest thing is people just have to utilize maintaining their body, making sure that they do their rehab, the prehab, you know what I'm saying? Doing all the stuff to make sure you take care of your body and mental as well. Like, you know what I'm saying? 17 games is a really long season, and to continue with the same mindset from week one to week 17 can be tough. You know what I'm saying? So being mentally strong, physically strong, and understanding what the end goal is, you know what I'm saying? Our end goal isn't 17 games. Our end game was never 17 games. So the 17 game aspect never mattered, because we always plan to play more.
Yeah. The end game and the end goal is always 20, right? It's always, lifting the Lombardi Trophy and being Super Bowl champions. And every team has that goal. You guys have been knocking on that doorstep the last couple of years, but for you personally, for Devontae Harris, what are the goals going into 2021 for you, and how do you get there?
I just want to go make an impact at corner. I want to make a huge impact on the special teams. I want to make a huge impact just on the team. You know what I'm saying? And I just want to compliment what everyone else brings to the table. That's great. When, you know what I'm saying, it's the next man up. I may not be a starter in the game, but when someone goes down or someone goes out of series, I need to be able to step in, go make plays, and then eventually find a big role on the team. So it just really kind of just doing my part, complimenting the team in whatever ways I can, and making plays when it counts.
Hey, man, this has been great. I really enjoyed the conversation, and, you know, I'm pulling for you to take that next step in your career. Everybody should go ahead and follow Devontae Harris at WhichKid on Twitter. WhichKid, explain the Twitter handle for me. Tell the people what it's all about.
Yeah, so I started really like my sophomore, junior of college. I made a hat, and it's called Wichita Kid, and it was just me just representing my hometown. And then transitioning to my rookie year of the league, I started a foundation called the Wichita Kid Foundation. So anytime, I always try and give my city a shout out, and I kind of just took on the name. So even in the league, like head coaches, players, everyone calls me Witch, you know what I'm saying? So I always try and represent my city, pull that name and kind of give the kids back home something to dream towards and realize that they come from a special place too.
Love it. It's great to see people who remember the hometowns and try to give a helping hand back to the hometown and bring the kids along for the ride later on and somebody to look up to. Devontae, really appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this and look forward to talking to you further up the road. Best of luck in 2021 and beyond, my man.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Really fun conversation there with Devontae Harris, a player that I'm excited to watch with the Baltimore Ravens kind of take the next step and really fight for a role in that secondary. And, you know, you look at the Ravens and they're a team that's knocking on the doorstep, and we'll see what happens this year. I love what they did in the draft. I love the fact they got Jason Owe. I love the fact they got Rashad Bateman. They're a team that I think could really be a thorn in the side for the Kansas City Chiefs. And one player who, if he could ever get past the NFC Championship game and would really be a thorn and really be a challenge to the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, is Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. But we very well might have seen the last of Aaron Rodgers in a Green Bay Packers uniform. And, you know, all hell seemed to break loose Thursday in the hours leading into the NFL draft when you had several reports start to come out that the Green Bay Packers were in conversation with teams about Rodgers, and that Aaron Rodgers was so miffed and so disenfranchised and so disenchanted and so disgruntled with the Packers that he wanted out, that he doesn't want to play in Green Bay anymore. And, you know, I started asking around, started talking to sources, started talking to executives around the league that I'm close to, and my takeaway was, and I was told, that talks on Thursday afternoon between the 49ers and the Packers were ongoing. And obviously, no deal wound up happening. No deal wound up going down. And in the draft, with the number three overall pick, the 49ers went out and they took Trey Lance out of North Dakota State. They seem happy with him, and he seems like an ideal fit because of his skill set, his deep ball accuracy, and everything that he does well fits into what Kyle Shanahan asks his quarterbacks to do. But I don't think this is over. And, you know, you talk to people and it's a very similar vibe to what you heard about Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks all offseason, and that Russell Wilson wants out of Seattle, that he's tired of the culture, that he's tired of, you know, coming up short and playing behind a shoddy offensive line. And with Rodgers, he started not having weapons. And yes, Davante Adams is a great piece. And you heard Devontae Harris might be the best receiver in the game. They have Aaron Jones, a nice running back, but you know, they just don't have the weapons, and you saw it again come home to roost in this year's NFC title game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that Rodgers wants weapons, that he wants help. And I think it really, really ticked him off that they traded up last year to take Jordan Love, the quarterback out in Nevada, the heir apparent, and what the Packers hope to be the predecessor to Aaron Rodgers at 37 years of age. But you talk to people, the trade market is strong for Aaron Rodgers. There are teams around the league, probably 2 to 3 handfuls of teams that are interested in Aaron Rodgers, and some have even poked around and asked about his availability. And this kind of reminds you of what happened with Carson Palmer getting out of Cincinnati. It kind of, you know, has that feel to it that it might not be today, it might not be tomorrow, but maybe by this season, Aaron Rodgers is somewhere else. And if I were a betting man, I would say that it's at least 50-50, maybe more so 60-40, that he's not in Green Bay come September. And you start to think about it, and I know that Aaron Rodgers would welcome the chance to go to San Francisco, and I think that the Las Vegas Raiders are kind of in that mix as well. And the Denver Broncos, certainly, after not taking a quarterback in the NFL draft in round one on Thursday night, they would make a lot of sense. And I think that if you drop him into an offense where you have a KJ Hamler, you have a Jerry Jeudy, you have a Noah Fant, you have an accomplished play caller in Pat Shurmur, who is a much better offensive coordinator than he is a head coach, that would be a situation that could work out really well for Aaron Rodgers. And I just have this sense, and I know that you talk to people and they'll tell you, Matt, you know, you can have unhappy players. He's the reigning MVP. Who cares? They'll mend the fences. They'll pay him and he'll get over it. I'm not so sure. I think that there's going to be a team after the draft that's just, you know, not thrilled with their quarterback situation, doesn't need the draft capital necessarily next year, that is in the wish list of an Aaron Rodgers, say a Las Vegas Raiders, say a Denver Broncos, say even a Miami Dolphins. If you have the chance to go and get Aaron Rodgers, you have to think about doing it. I just think the market is too strong and Aaron Rodgers is just miffed enough that it's going to be really tough for the Packers to smooth this over. And I think there's a really good chance he's playing elsewhere next year. That's where we are there. But, you know, let's get to the questions. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Lombardo NFL. And each and every week, we will answer some questions from listeners to the podcast. This one comes in from Patrick Powell at Gordzy on Twitter. And Patrick Powell asks, what do you see as the Eagles' primary areas of need for rounds 2 through 7? And I think now that they went out and they got Devonta Smith, they need to go and get a cornerback. They need to get a perimeter player. And I think that they also need to look at offensive linemen. And you look at the kid out of Oklahoma State, just a mauler at right tackle, Tanner. And I think that he's a guy that he could step in either at tackle or guard. I think he's somebody that the Eagles could target. But I think for them, it comes down to perimeter play on defense, cornerback. It comes down to offensive line play because they were so banged up last year and they started something like 37 different offensive line combinations. They need to shore that up. And when you look at Howie Roseman, he's a guy that's not afraid, and we touched on this very early on in the show, to move around the board and accumulate the kind of assets that they need to come away with the players that fill the obvious voids on their roster. And I think that Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State, 6'5", 320 pounds, he's a guy that could step in and be an immediate impact player along the Eagles' offensive line that they could target. And, you know, you look at, you know, some of the cornerbacks that are available, even an edge rusher like Azeez Ojulari, or if the Eagles really want to get wild and they want to move up, Asante Samuel Jr. out of Florida State, elite ball skills, a physical player, very similar skill set to his father, who played for the Eagles and the New England Patriots, Asante Samuel. I think that those are two players that could be on the Eagles' wish list. And another question comes in, this one from at S3 Friedman. He asks, what's your outlook on where the Bears' first-round pick will land in the 2022 draft? It would be interesting to see if the Bears commit to Justin Fields at the start of the season. I don't see Chicago sacrificing their season to go with Fields as the starter from the outset. I tend to disagree there. And, you know, I know that they sounded and seemed committed to Andy Dalton and tweeted out that he was QB1 after they signed him in free agency. But I just think that Justin Fields has too much arm talent. I think he's too gifted of an athlete. I think that he's too good of a fit in Matt Nagy's offense in a situation where if Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace don't win today, if they don't make a legitimate impact and make strides towards winning a division and making a playoff run this year, they're gone. And I know conventional wisdom says if you draft a quarterback and you're a GM or an offensive coordinator, you're going to have a couple of years. I don't think that's the case in Chicago, because if you see Fields' talent and if he is an electrifying, you know, starting quarterback who can make plays on the run and make all the throws and all of those things, and you stink and you go 6-10 with Justin Fields playing well, you're gone. You're fired. And you're especially fired if you wait until October or November to get Justin Fields on the playing field. So I think that the Bears, they're another team like Carolina in the NFC South. They're up against it because they're in a division with the Green Bay Packers. As long as Aaron Rodgers is there, you pencil them in for 11 plus wins. I really love what the Minnesota Vikings have done the last couple of years. I think they win 9 or 10 games based on merit, based on talent, based on how much talent they have on both sides of the ball, especially guys like Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson. And then the Bears are there. I think they're better than the Detroit Lions. I think that they're, you know, more equipped, especially with Allen Robinson at wide receiver, Khalil Mack on defense. But if they don't win 6, 7, 8, 9 games, they're gone. They're blowing out that GM and the head coach. So I think if you're a Giants fan looking at that pick, coming in somewhere around where the Giants picked this year, 12 through 15, and I think next year the Giants are going to be better. I think they're going to be in the mix in the NFC East where you're going to have, you know, all four teams are going to be better. I love what Washington did, both sides of the ball this offseason. They have maybe the best defense in the NFC East, and they have an offense that's loaded with talent with Deebo Samuel, Terry McLaurin, Antonio Gibson, and now a competent quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick. Then you look at Dallas. If Dak Prescott is healthy with all of those weapons, they could score 30 to 33 points per game. Micah Parsons, a gifted sideline-to-sideline player. And the Eagles, I think, are a little bit further away, but they're going to be better. They're not going to win four games next year. They're going to win 6, 7 games if Devonta Smith is the type of player that everybody believes he is. So if you're the Giants and you have Kenny Golladay and you have Saquon Barkley and you have, you know, Kadarius Toney and Sterling Shepard and your defense improved as well, I think the Giants should win 9 to 10 games. So if you're the Giants, you're probably picking with your own pick somewhere between 14 and 17. And I think that the Bears pick is going to come in somewhere around pick 11 through 13. So Dave Gettleman did himself tremendous favors in next year's draft in a class where he's much more optimistic about what it has the chance to be.
This podcast is under review.
Uh-oh, you know what that sound means. It is time to put this podcast under review. It is time to read a 5-star review for the Matt Lombardo Show inside the Stacking the Box podcast feed. We're going to do it every week. If you like what you hear, please subscribe in the Apple Podcast Store. Please subscribe on Spotify if you prefer to get us there. And leave us those 5-star reviews. Let us know what you like, what you don't like about the show. This one comes in from The Real Todd Rogers, headline The All Juice Team. Guys, I've been searching for an NFL podcast since Therese Paylor's untimely passing and the podcast he and Charles Robinson did went on a hiatus. You guys provide some of the same knowledgeable insight with fun and sometimes hilarious takes. I can't wait to listen when I see it pop up in my feed. Thank you so much for the great content. And of course, that also goes for the Stacking the Box podcast with Matt Verderam and Mark Carman that drops every Tuesday inside this podcast. So if you like what you hear, please subscribe to Stacking the Box on the Apple Podcast Store and on Spotify. My podcast, The Matt Lombardo Show, is released every Friday afternoon. This has been a really fun show. Thanks, of course, to Yetur Gross-Matos and Devonta Harris. Thanks to the help from FanSided's own Danny Friedman and Cole Thompson for helping put this podcast together. I'm Matt Lombardo. Enjoy the rest of the NFL draft. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Lombardo NFL. Please subscribe. Please leave those 5-star reviews. And I'll talk to you next week right here on the Matt Lombardo Show inside FanSided Stacking the Box podcast feed.